It's great pleasure to introduce our second guest of honour. He hardly needs any introduction at all. Alan Titchmarsh, a superb gardener, trained gardener. I think it was Kew, was it? Yes, the absolute top of the range. He's been a broadcaster, as we all know, a man of many talents. But I think the one thing that we all like about Alan is that he is unchanging. He is as charming and modest as ever he was from the beginning. In fact, he reminds me of the chap in the poem If, who walked with kings but didn't lose the common touch. And I think you've walked with quite a few members of the royal family in your time. So, Alan, I'm delighted to welcome you. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Janet. I'll never forget what Janet said to me once when I was asking her about how do we get this done, how do we do this, and Janet very wisely said, you just keep on and on and on and on until it's easier for them to say yes than no.
Yeah.
So in the words of Winston Churchill, we keep buggering on. Congratulations first of all to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who today announced £60 million in his budget for tree planting. But as one of the noble lords said to me this evening, we just hope he's allowing for watering and aftercare as well. Now, this morning's Times carried an obituary for Professor Aubrey Manning, a hugely accomplished and respected biologist who's died at the age of 88. Manning was revered by all who met him and inspired several generations of students who were privileged to attend his lectures at the University of Edinburgh. What struck me particularly was the following statement. Manning believed that people cannot exist separately from the environment in which they live, and that the challenge for humanity lies in planning a future that embraces people's needs and wants as well as those of the natural world. He said, I'm not arguing for biologists to rule the world, but I do believe that economic planning, social planning of all kinds, should listen to what biologists have to say to help in the construction of a long-term future. Now then, horticulture, gardening, and all things connected with the land are a part of that biology, a fact which is all too readily forgotten by those who see gardening in particular as something to be carried out by those who retire early, or those who are unable to do anything else. I hope that one particular past Prime Minister is still smarting from the letter he received from me when he suggested that people who were incapable of holding down any job that required a degree of intelligence should be encouraged to take up such tasks as litter picking and gardening. His reply was refreshingly contrite, and I hope an indication of a change of heart, or am I being overly optimistic? I welcome hugely this report by the All-Party Parliamentary Gardening and Horticulture Group, who thankfully see horticulture for what it is, a vital part of our national economy, employing more than 500,000 people and making a contribution to the national GDP in the region of £24 billion. But they also recognise it as a vital part of the lives, both physical and spiritual, of those who live on our islands. We are rightly famed for our famous gardens. They attract tourists from all over the world, enriching our economy to the tune of £2.9 billion. Garden visiting, who'd have thought? Who knows? Well, they ought to. Parks and open spaces, so vital for the benefit of human beings in terms of exercise, education about the living world, and letting off steam, are so often the first things to go in times of economic recession. They should be the last things to go, in that they impinge on the big three concerns of any government: education, law and order, and health. Out outdoor spaces are known to promote health and well-being by virtue of the fresh air and the exercise they provide. They relieve pressure on the National Health Service. They combat depression and help prevent frustration that often has its outlet in crime. But because such benefits are impossible to measure, parks and public gardens are frequently regarded as dispensable. Big mistake. Huge. I'm not going to repeat everything the report says, but I do want to reinforce the importance of plant biosecurity, especially in the light of Brexit, when we will need to be especially assiduous in our endeavours to prevent the incursion of such disastrous pathogens as Xylella. I also want to urge the government to encourage those involved in the production of plants in this country by securing access to seasonal labour, we've heard a little about that, by nurturing innovation and training of the future skilled workforce. We have a great shortfall. Without it, our horticulture industry will founder. It'll make us even more dependent on imports. The fact that we imported ash and oak trees from Europe and found ourselves hosting ash dieback and sudden oak death is nothing short of an embarrassment when both these species can be raised with ease in the UK, given the incentive to do so. Horticulture plays a major role in every aspect of our lives, in our living environments, in our health, social care systems, and in protecting our environment and mitigating against pollution and climate change. These are enormous issues. The government needs to sit up and take notice of this sector. If it continues to be undervalued and overlooked, and we carry on building houses without gardens, it will have a devastating effect, not only on our national economy, but also on the environment and our living conditions as a whole. This report is a tremendous wake-up call. But if its recommendations are not acted upon, especially in the light of Brexit, when this country's own horticultural assets are capable of playing an even more important role than they have done heretofore, it will be a waste of all our time and a squandering of our national assets. Without a buoyant gardening and landscape industry, we'd find ourselves living in a concrete wasteland. Without gardens, green landscapes and parks, we won't be able to help the government make the environment better through their 25-year plan. We won't be able to nurture our children's interest in growing and give them some sense of the understanding of the powers of nature and the opportunities in life it can provide, whether that means a career in the industry as a landscaper or a passion for doing their bit in a world at the mercy of climate change and ever-shifting government priorities. Everyone in this room, I hope, harbours the same feelings as I do, that the gardens and open spaces that surround us, along with those who cherish and look after them, who grow and propagate plants, who beautify the landscape and encourage stewardship of the great outdoors, deserve and merit the support of our nation. We can't buy ourselves out of a recession without mortgaging ourselves to the hilt. And history has shown that neither can we build our way out of a recession. What this report must do is wake up those in power to the fact that the only remaining alternative is to grow ourselves out of a recession. And I firmly believe that we can most certainly help in that direction. If, over the next few years, those of us in horticulture find ourselves called upon to give this country the green support it needs, we in turn need the support of government in order to provide a worthy legacy for our children and for future generations who realise what today we so often forget, that as a nation, we are supported by our landscape, physically and emotionally. To squander what it offers us, and to undervalue and to fail to support those who work in horticulture, whether in gardens or in food production, is both short-sighted and dangerous. This report is not a series of options. It's a series of essentials. And I salute those of you who've taken the trouble to prepare it and hope to goodness that it's acted upon. Thank you very much.
Alan, thank you very much indeed for a very wide-ranging speech, not pulling any punches, but also doing with good humour and good nature. So thank you so much.